Okay, please silence all devices. We have a bill up and a presentation. Kimberly, please call the roll.
Chair Jill Lombardo.
Here.
Vice Chair LaMarca.
Here.
Ranking Democratic Member Joseph.
Here.
Representatives Alvarez.
Here, ma'am.
Anton.
Here.
Campbell.
Here.
Kennedy.
Here.
Caruso.
Here. Good morning.
Cassell.
Present.
Chambliss.
Here.
Clemens. Duggan.
Here.
Fernandez Barkin.
Here.
Gossett Seidman.
Here.
Griffiths.
Yes, ma'am.
McFarland. Robinson.
Here.
Yeager.
Here.
We have a quorum, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Let the record reflect that quorum is present. Members, we have one bill today, and then we're going to go and get an overview of the Florida Office of Broadband on especially the upcoming grants. So first, we'll take up the bill, HB 125, Chair McClain, the utility system rate base values. You're recognized.
Good morning, Chairman G. Lombardo, Vice Chair LaMarca, and Ranking Member Joseph, members of the committee. I appreciate the opportunity to be able to present House Bill 125. The current regulatory environment hampers market investment in water wastewater system acquisition. Current law only allows valuation based on book value, which is the original cost minus depreciation. That at times can severely undervalue the assets of a system and can create an inequitable transaction for the seller, thus not allowing smaller troubled systems to be transitioned over to more experienced operators. House Bill 125 will allow for alternative valuation method. Both buyer and seller must agree to use this method. There are protections built in for the rate payers that must be considered by the PSC when considering this valuation methodology. The Florida PSC has oversight and final approval of any deal that would be consummated under this valuation. That is the bill, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Members, are there questions on the bill? Recognized. Recognize.
Thank you, Chair. So, and thank you, Representative, for the bill. Just a question. So, if based on book value, which is the existing method, some of these utilities are like 50, 60 years old, and therefore there wouldn't be any book value. Is that right?
Mr. Chairman, technically, yes. However, I think so I guess let me talk a little bit about my experience just for a second. So I sat on the county commission for 12 years. During that time I was on the county commission, we had our own water wastewater utility. Obviously, as one of the five county commissioners, I sat as a rate maker. So I have some experience, at least from the public sector perspective. And then obviously I'm a contractor in my life outside of here, so I have some experience also in the private sector. So normally, when a utility is acquired, and I think you'll see some of that language in here. Certainly there's some folks from PSC here that could talk to some of what they look at when they're going to consider this. But so certainly it could. However, there are still assets in the ground that have some value to them. I think there are still, if there have been upgrades made, then certainly those would add to the book value versus taken away from it. And so it's a possibility. However, I think there's always going to be some value to the system.
Thank you. And so basically, correct me if I'm wrong, this bill, it allows for a fair market value valuation, which allows the buyer to get a larger rate of return in order to have the revenue in order to reinvest in the infrastructure, into the utility, and provide better service. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Rep. I'm sorry we didn't get a chance to chat yesterday, but thanks for answering some of my questions earlier this morning. In this committee, we've recently heard a lot about surcharges and surcharges not being applied equally and the costs being passed on to consumers. And that's really my initial hesitation with the bill is, are we rewarding these municipalities who are controlling the waste and water, or electric, but in this scenario, waste and water, to not invest in the upkeep and the maintenance and their infrastructure, take the money that they've earned, put it into the general revenue, and then allowing, you know, selling them, and then eventually that cost to upgrade that infrastructure being passed on to consumers in this five-year rate, which is included in the bill. So can you just address some of those concerns that I have?
Thank you. Representative Cassell, I apologize that I wasn't able to reach you. I unfortunately don't have your number, but we'll make sure we get that straightened out today. And so I think that you certainly hit on, at one of the things you hit on is actually maybe a bill for another day, but I think that it's a concern of mine when we talk about, look, when I look at all the water projects that we submit as members, that we'll be submitting in this during this next session. When I look at that, I have concern that municipalities haven't kept up with their own O&M, right? And so because of that, they ask us then to repair things that I don't know if are not. Now, I'm editorializing, sorry, but I don't know sometimes if that's necessarily our responsibility. In this case, I think we have private sector investors who are willing to come in, look at a system, get a true evaluation of it. Anytime that a system, one of the challenges we had when I was on the county commission is we originally had some consultants who were not telling us what was necessarily in the ground, what we were going to have to replace. And so we end up in a situation like this where maybe we bought a system and then realized later that it wasn't exactly what we thought it was going to be. And so we ended up having to do some things. But so I think to your question, I don't think we're rewarding anyone. I think a lot of times what you're going to see, and especially from smaller operators, is they just didn't have the cash availability. They didn't raise their rates maybe like they should have, and some of those things. So I think this will help with some of the smaller operators. I don't see any most municipalities aren't interested in selling their water wastewater system, so I don't know if municipalities will necessarily benefit from this.
Rep. Campbell, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for presenting this bill, Representative McClain. My question comes to just to understanding this a little bit more in depth is that are we now taking the power away from the municipalities and putting it onto the PSC? If I'm understanding that correctly?
Mr. Chairman? No. Normally your municipality is going to be either governed by the elected body or there's their authorities. I don't know in your communities. And again, under my particular situation in Marion County where I came from, our water wastewater utility was run by the five county commissioners. So we had final authority. The PSC has no authority in the municipal utility world. That's because it's not regulated by them. It's regulated by the local elected officials or an authority.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So with the implementation of this bill here, who would be the true overseers and who would we be now really focused on and holding responsible to ensure that the current situation doesn't keep continuing?
Mr. Chairman, thank you. The PSC will have final authority. They would have the final authority to. They can deny the request outright. They also have the rule. They also have the ability to. So in this case, they would set a. They'll be asked to set rates. They'll have the final authority to set the rate. They could also deny the deal, and say this isn't in the best interest of the public. And I have an amendment that'll speak to a little bit of that. That we changed some language on, but I'll talk about that during the amendment process.
Last question. I guess this might be similar to Representative Cassell's, but will consumers see a rate increase due to backlogs of what's been going on?
Chairman. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's possible. Normally in my work as a rate maker, I guess, if you will, normally you're gonna this will be included in a larger system, and so you're gonna have those costs spread out. So you're gonna actually see, you should be able to sometimes see decreases. I'd love to walk you through a history sometime of what we did in Marion County and kind of tell you about where we were headed and then actually what happened because of acquisitions that we made, some of those things which were actually more beneficial to the users on our system. But and I, again, I think the PSC does a great job of looking out for the consumer anytime there's something that comes before them.
Rep. Chambliss, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a quick question for clarification purposes. This bill speaks to water utilities and not electric utilities, correct?
That's correct.
Was there any particular reason why? Is it because of the way that the cost is analyzed between the two systems, or was the intention, what was the intention of focusing on water utilities instead of electric utilities?
Chairman, thank you. I think if we opened up the can of worms of the the electric, that would certainly create, that's a whole nother conversation to have. And I think what we're trying to do here is meet a need. I think we're trying to meet a need here of the water, wastewater situations that we have in the state of Florida.
Okay. Good. We do have an amendment. All right, Ranking Member Joseph.
Thank you. I was a late hand raiser. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you. I know we had started answering the question before the committee because some members had some concerns, and I just wanted it for the record. What is wrong with the current system that you are trying to fix with your bill?
Chairman.
Yep.
Thank you. Thank you for that question, and I appreciate you all trying to get with me this morning before I got here. Currently, because of the original cost minus depreciation, I think Representative Crusoe, that was somewhat of his question is, well, there could be no value to this if you'd owned it long enough. Let's just say the original cost was $100,000. You got a 30-year depreciation schedule. You own it for 30 years. There's not going to be much left there. And so, however, there's still value to the system because it has revenue coming in. So there is value to it. And so if you tried to only do it based on the old method, most operators don't feel like they're not receiving the value that they should receive for their systems. Again, I'd love to give you some bedtime stories about running the utility, but certainly in my case, we had a lot of smaller operators in our community who had built systems required by the county commissioner. You have to build a system to build a subdivision or whatever it might be, and then 20, 30 years later, they want to sell their system. They think it's worth X. We think it's worth Y, and so we could never really get a deal on it. And certainly needed to just to improve the system itself.
All right. Thank you. So we have an amendment. You want to explain the amendment?
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members, the amendment it corrects a drafting error in the title. It revises language to clarify that the Public Service Commission may deny a petition if denial of the petition is in the interest of the public. And then it clarifies some of the eligibility requirements for the size of the system that can do acquiring. It just further clarified that to ensure that, one, that these whoever's the acquirer, they are actually running a system now. It can't be, so it couldn't just be someone coming in wanting to buy something up to make an investment opportunity. And so that's the amendment, Mr. Chair.
Questions on the amendment? You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question is, why are we limiting it to the utilities that are engaged in arm's length acquisition of water or wastewater systems that are no more than 10,000 customers or permitting at least 3 million gallons of drinking water a day? What was the rationale for picking those specific numbers?
Chairman, thank you. Representative, that goes... Ranking Member, that goes a little bit back to the question that I believe Representative Chambliss asked me, or Representative Campbell, I apologize, about does this include the electric OEUs in it?
It's not about the electric.
No, I know. And what I'm saying is this clarifies that it can only be a wastewater a water or wastewater operator, they have to have X amount of customers, they have to have, or they have to have X amount of gallons permitted, which takes them out of, which takes the electric utilities out of play. So this, so we wanted to clarify, it has to be someone who is operating a water wastewater system. They have to have 10,000 customers, they have to, or they have to have a permit to pump up to 3 million gallons per day. So it limits who could, in other words, because you have folks that if we left this without any eligibility, you could have someone come in who's just an investor who has a lot of money and says, I'm gonna go buy this utility, and then I know that I can get a rate of return on my money. This is actual, you have to be an operator, you have to have customers, you have to have the ability to supply that water to the customers that you're gonna, the utility you're gonna purchase.
Okay, do we have any public testimony on the amendment? All right, Kevin Cleary, waiving support. That's it. Okay, debate on the amendment. Close on the amendment?
Wait.
All right, without, adopt without objection. All right, so questions on the bill as amended. All right, public testimony on the bill. Oh, sorry. Rep. Chambliss, question.
Just a very quick question, because the previous line of question just made me think of something. Can I ask a question that kind of includes the amendment, right?
Yeah.
Exactly. All right. So I was thinking of a farm and someone who has like a natural well. Would that, without that amendment, be considered a water system?
Mr. Chairman, it would be considered a well, but I think a system is if you're supplying water to someone else, you could have a consumptive use permit for that well from DEP, but you don't necessarily have a utility that you're operating. So therefore, under the rule, you would not be able to purchase a utility because you're not currently operating one, and you don't have the customers or the ability to do it. So,
okay. Do we have public testimony? All right, we got Kevin Cleary waving in support. And then Chris Hansen. Waiving support. Okay. Do we have debate on the bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative McLean, for bringing this bill. I am going to be up on the bill. I think any time we put this level of specificity into a bill as to what the parameters are going to be when we're talking about acquisitions of this nature, I think is a good thing. Obviously, as I mentioned, I do have concerns about, you know, the potential impact on consumers. You mentioned in your presentation that some of these companies, you know, and we know, you know, likely haven't been maintaining their systems, haven't been keeping them up with regards to maintenance. And they, you mentioned possibly that they've maybe not been charging the right rate. So I would love to work with you on this bill as it continues to move through the process and maybe look at ways of capping rates during this process for these companies. Because on some level, there's a buyer beware, right? If you're buying a system that you know hasn't been kept up, we shouldn't then allow you to buy it at full purchase price and then really kind of pass that work on to the consumer. So I look forward to working with you. I will be up on it today, but those are my concerns.
Rep. Duggan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for bringing this good bill. I just want to echo some of the other comments and concerns, including some that you've made. I know in my district, there's a private water utility that has not invested in its infrastructure for 40 years. When new users, potential users, particularly commercial users, come and they seek a letter of availability from this utility because they have the franchise area, wanting to get confirmation that they can be served, the utility gives them a letter of availability, but it says you have to make all of these infrastructure improvements that really aren't really just for their commercial use. It's designed to do the work that the utility is supposed to be doing by oversizing the lines, et cetera. So what happens is that commercial use doesn't locate there. They move on. They look somewhere else. So it's actually having a negative impact on commercial and economic activity and property values in the service area. So ever since I've been elected, I've been trying to crack that nut. They're not regulated by the PSC because they're a nonprofit, so I have no hammer there. Your bill has educated me that this might be the problem. They just can't sell out, so everybody's, you know, stuck. So I hope this helps solve the problem. Thank you.
All right, any other debate? Rep. Campbell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Rep. McClain. Once again, I'll say this. When I came in this morning, I was quite skeptical, but your amendment in kind of clarifying who and how it can be assessed kind of helped subdue those questions I had in my mind. I second Rep. Cassell's concerns about how does this affect the consumer, and definitely interested to see how this bill begins to manifest itself as you continue to push it across the finish line. So for today, I will be up on the bill, and so thank you.
Rep. Caruso.
Thank you, Chair. Members, this bill solves a problem that's been growing over the last 50 years as small utilities continue to experience deferred maintenance on their systems. And our current system does not allow any new operator to come in, take over that, and make those deferred maintenance adjustments. So this bill allows these new entities to come in, take over the deteriorating system and make the appropriate adjustments to their infrastructure that is so desperately needed. So I hope everyone is up on this great bill.
Anybody else for debate?
Not exactly officially debate, but it was part of what I was talking to you about. I know that there are some members of the agency that are in the audience. I know that my members had quite a few questions, and I don't know if, Mr. Chair, it'd be possible to ask maybe just one or two questions of the agency before taking a vote. I'm not sure if we can do that, but at least I try to ask.
I think we'll just let the PSC, if you guys can just hang out maybe afterwards, and some of the members can go and have a conversation with you because there are some questions. So.
Thank you.
Any other debate? All right, you recognize the close.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Cassell and Ranking Member and Rep. Chambliss and Campbell, there are some in the valuation process. The PSC has in that part of the issue, part of the valuation process is for them to, there's an engineer that's going to be hired by both parties. They take that, so that would take into account what's in the ground, right? So that all is going to be added into this process, so that they know the true value of the utility itself. That's where we got into trouble when I was on the county commission. We had some, we weren't evaluating what was actually in the ground, and so we actually made some acquisitions that they were done. I'll blame it on my predecessors there, but some of it was done before I got on the Board of County Commissioners, and you know, we had to fix it. But I do think that the correct safeguards in place. One of the reasons I'm really interested in this bill, when you all look at the amount of water projects that we all put appropriations requests in, I think last year it was $1 billion and some. I don't see that slowing down this year. And a lot of it is for upgrades and maintenance and some of those types of things. And certainly as we continue to have a burgeoning, as we continue to grow, I don't think that local governments by themselves, I don't think we, the state, I don't think any of us have the ability to take care of all the needs that we have as it relates to supplying water or wastewater to the citizens. therefore we have to have the private sector be involved. They can bring investment that certainly we don't have the ability to do. And so that's my interest in it. I appreciate everyone's comments, your questions. Again, I apologize to some of you that I wasn't able to get to you, but certainly we'll make sure we get that settled. My door is always open. You're welcome to have, please come see me, or I'll come see you, whichever. And I'd love to have conversations going forward on this. And I look for your favorable support.
Okay. Kimberly, please call the roll.
Chair Jill Lombardo.
Yes.
Vice Chair LaMarca.
Yes.
Ranking Democratic Member Joseph.
Yes.
Representatives Alvarez.
Yes, ma'am.
Antone.
Yes.
Campbell.
Yes.
Hannity.
Yes.
Caruso.
Yes.
Cassell.
Yes.
Chambliss.
Yes.
Clemens.
Yes.
Duggins.
Yes.
Fernandez Barking.
Yes.
Gossett-Seidman.
Yes.
Griffiths.
Yes.
McFarland.
Yes.
Robinson.
Yes.
Yeager.
Yes.
The bill passes.
By your vote, the bill will be reported favorably. Congratulations.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, members.
All right, next up, we have the Florida Office of Broadband overview. The grants have already kind of kicked off, and they're going to give us a little bit of an update. We have Katie Smith and... Go ahead, and introduce yourself, and you are recognized.
There we go. Can you hear me now? Thank you, Rep. Chambliss. Good morning, everybody. Good morning, Chair, Vice Chair, members of the committee. My name is Benjamin Melnick. I'm with the Department of Economic Opportunity. I'm the Deputy Secretary for Community Development. And with community development, while we do have many programs, such as the Rural Infrastructure Fund that can benefit small and rural communities, today we are focusing on the Office of Broadband. And I'm joined today by the Director of the Office, Ms. Katie Smith. We very much appreciate this opportunity to update you on where we are at with the office. I'd like to cover some background and general information, then I'll turn it over to my colleague to get into the individual programs. So, under the leadership of Governor DeSantis and the Florida Legislature, DEO's Office of Broadband was established 2 years ago with a very specific vision and responsibilities. The vision of the Office of Broadband is to work with local and state government agencies, community organizations, and private businesses to increase the availability and accessibility of broadband internet throughout the state, and specifically in small and rural communities. Responsibilities of the office include promoting broadband internet services around the state, creating the local technology planning teams, producing the Florida Strategic Plan, and the development of both the Florida Broadband Availability Map and the Faster Florida Broadband Map, as well as developing the Broadband Opportunity Grant Program. DEO's Office of Broadband is the state entity spearheading broadband expansion and utilization efforts in unserved and underserved communities throughout Florida. Since its creation in July of 2020, the office has been focused on engaging and listening to different industry sectors and members of the community to better understand the individual needs associated with broadband internet service availability and accessibility. As you all know, every community is different, and the office has learned the impact and importance of broadband expansion, availability, accessibility, adoption, and use by building local technology planning teams in every county and publishing a strategic plan for broadband and hosting community engagement webinars and rulemaking workshops for feedback and comments. The office also published the Broadband Opportunity Program annual report for 2022 and submitted it to the governor, the president of the Florida Senate, and the speaker of the Florida House of Representatives. The report includes specific information on the Broadband Opportunity Program itself, the applications and the types of projects received, as well as general information regarding the office. This report can be found on our website at www.floridajobs.org/broadband. And the office website also provides a significant number of resources for entities looking for more information. We include information regarding statutory initiatives, our procurements, outreach webinars, and more. Over the last 2 years, There have been a number of additional outreach and engagement efforts made by our office. And you can see from this slide that these organizations and entities include multiple national agencies and organizations, state and local governments, and various programs that have broadband internet components. Understanding the impact that broadband internet can have on small and rural communities, the office has made significant efforts to reach out to those communities to ensure future success. The local technology planning teams are an office initiative that was rolled out in September of 2021 to initiate community engagement and provide an opportunity for industry sector leaders, businesses, and community residents to participate in a forum devoted to discussing and planning out broadband needs within their community specifically. And every funding opportunity office oversees requires some type of community engagement, and Florida's local technology planning team initiative has engaged communities and provided each community with an outlet for working through the planning process. So these local technology planning team efforts are really an effort to undertake to bring various industry sectors together across the community and break down those silos that might otherwise exist. And all 67 counties have identified a team lead, and most have created a full team, and many are meeting regularly to discuss opportunities and challenges in the area related to broadband internet. The office attends as many local technology planning team meetings as possible and hosts monthly meetings with the team leads to keep communities up to date on any developments with funding opportunities and initiatives. And our office rolled out a 9-step toolkit for the teams to use, and it provides a step-by-step guide for picking a team lead, the team members themselves, the industry sector leaders, and other participants. And the toolkit also provides conversation starters, sample surveys, strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and challenges analysis to assist the communities in identifying their needs where unserved and underserved areas may be. The teams also help the community identify potential projects with service providers for the funding that will be available in the coming months. We published the Florida Strategic Plan for Broadband in June of 2022. We had a great partnership with Dr. Mark Jamieson from the University of Florida's Public Utilities Research Center. And over a 6-month period, the center conducted data gathering and interviews with industry stakeholders, including consultants and local and state governments, internet service providers, tribes, nonprofit organizations, and community members. The plan provides the 3 steps to a connected economy, which are availability, adoption, and use. And these support the development of workforce, education, and healthcare. And each step must be undertaken with a high level of accountability to ensure positive impacts in business growth, job growth, development of workforce education and job training opportunities, and healthier Floridians and a connected workforce housing. The plan makes Florida more competitive for federal grant funding by providing direction to the state on infrastructure needs, on assessments, stakeholder engagement, and office initiatives and future funding decisions. It will also be used as part of the 5-year plan for the Broadband Equity Access and Deployment Program and the Digital Equity Program. Communities can utilize the strategic plan by identifying their role in closing the digital divide in underserved and unserved communities. Ways in which this can be accomplished is by partnering with stakeholders through the local technology planning teams themselves, planning for broadband deployment, and identifying how funding can and will be used in their community. Determining who will be building out the infrastructure and network can be a vital step in both engaging the community as well as planning out those next steps. And of course, promoting the adoption and use of the service once the service is in place. And the state will support these community-based actions and efforts to ensure achievement of these goals. And coordinated planning efforts will be supported by the Office of Broadband through continued encouragement of public-private partnerships with state entities such as the Florida Department of Transportation, the Florida Department of Education, the Florida Department of State, and communities at all levels of government. These partnerships will ensure the smooth implementation of the strategies across the state of Florida. Currently, we have 2 broadband maps on the Office of Broadband website. The first map is the Florida Broadband Availability Map, which uses crowdsourcing to collect data via speed tests taken by citizens around the state. Crowdsourcing is a process of empowering individuals to participate and upload their data. And this provides every Floridian the opportunity to engage and provide input to the state about their internet service and availability. The speed test provides the internet speed as well as the service provider at the location. Any personal information such as the physical address or the IP address is not made publicly available. And through the speed test process, it's also possible to recognize and identify a specific location that does not have any service. And these speed tests can be taken by going to the Office of Broadband website. The tests take less than 3 minutes to complete, and the data is logged and the map is updated in real time. This information provides the office with public input on where service is available and is not available. And while the tests do not provide what the highest potential speed available at the address is, or necessarily what the individual is paying for their service, it does provide good insight into what is available, and the availability can be used as an indicator for potential project areas, or at least areas for more focus or more investigation. These tests don't stop. So the more engagement we have, the more individuals that take these tests through this whole process, with updating or an initial test, the better the data gathering is and the more complete picture it provides us. So we're always looking to get more information on what's happening in our communities. It's a great way to make sure that the community's unserved areas are seen, and we invite all of your assistance in keeping that word going and making sure that we keep receiving speed tests. The second map on our website is the Faster Florida Broadband Map, which is a GIS map that was created by DEO and provides multiple layers of data. They include anchor institutions such as schools, libraries, and hospitals, as well as the Rural Digital Opportunity Fund locations and environmentally sensitive areas. We had great support from the State Geographic Information Officer, Kim Jackson, to put that map together. And the office is working to add more layers of information to make that map more robust and assist communities with identifying further project areas. But now, at this time, I'd like to invite Director Katie Smith up to take over and walk you through the program's updates and ongoing and upcoming activities.
Thank you, Deputy Secretary, and thank you, members of the committee. My name is Katie Smith. I am the director for DEO's Office of Broadband, and a lot of our office initiatives, as Deputy Secretary Melnick stated, are on our website. So you can find a lot of information, floridajobs.org/broadband, and we really pride ourselves on the transparency of what's on our website. If there is an initiative, we put it up there. If there's more information that can be added or provided, we put it up there. You can find information about mapping, local technology planning teams, that toolkit, that nine-step process toolkit that is up, that's available. Federal funding opportunities, any procurements that we are seeking. Any of the proposals that are submitted, we do post those proposals for those funding opportunities. Those are posted to our site as well. We do provide technical assistance, and the technical assistance webinars are posted as well. We encourage you to sign up for Communication Blast so that you can stay up with us and everything that is happening, any press release, any communication that we put out there, that information is available via signing up for our site. So let's talk about funding. So the first program is the Broadband Opportunity Program, which was established in Section 288.9962 of the Florida Statutes. And it is to provide specifically funding for the deployment and installation of broadband infrastructure expansion to unserved areas of the state. Last session, we had $400 million that was appropriated to the program. And of that, 40% was specifically set aside for rural projects. The term broadband infrastructure essentially refers to the building out the physical infrastructure of the internet. So that may be laying fiber optic cables, that could be building wireless towers, or attaching wires and equipment to utility poles. For the Broadband Opportunity Program, applicants are eligible for grants of up to $5 million. This includes corporations, limited liability companies, general partnerships, limited partnerships, political subdivisions, and tribes. Applicants to the program must be able to show public engagement and support for the project to be considered for funding. We formally initiated rulemaking in May of 2022. And to receive input from our communities and stakeholders, we hosted three workshops, one in Polk, one in Santa Rosa, and one in Glades County. We had over 150 guests in attendance. We received over 80 comments for consideration. And the that consideration was part of the construction of Rule 73C-50, which became effective in November. In the fall, we also held two technical assistance webinars, one which focused specifically on rural communities. And these webinars provided information to any interested party applying for grant funding. The application window opened November the 2nd through December 9th. We received 110 applications in 53 counties for a total of $280 million in requested state funding. The office closed the 45-day challenge window on January the 28th. I think it's also important to note that the significant amount of privately leveraged funds that were part of and associated with these 110 applications, that totaled over $700 million to be invested in Florida communities. I think this is a great example of public-private partnerships at work. Per statute, the office may not award any grant to an otherwise eligible grant applicant to provide broadband internet service in a project area for which any other federal funding has been awarded. The grant under this section may not be used to serve any retail end user that has already is provided access to broadband internet service. A grant awarded under this section when combined with any other state and local funds may not fund more than 50% of the total project cost, and a single project may not be awarded in excess of $5 million. On February 2nd, Governor DeSantis announced the first round of awards for the program. $144 million in total funding was awarded to 58 projects across 41 counties to create access for 160,000 homes and businesses. We're currently reviewing applications with challenges pertaining to the challenge process. And by this, so at this time, we anticipate that the remaining funds that are available will be available for to be applied for in a second round of funding later this spring. The Capital Projects Fund is a program run through the U.S. Treasury, and it focuses on broadband projects with a direct tie back to workforce, education, and health monitoring. In total, Florida received an allocation of over $366 million. And on November 30th of 2022, the U.S. Treasury awarded Florida $247.8 million for the Broadband Infrastructure Program. This represents the approval of the first of three programs and proposals submitted to the U.S. Treasury associated with the Capital Projects Fund. This broadband infrastructure program is the first of the three. It comprises a total of 70% of the total allocation and prioritizes infrastructure deployment in areas where broadband service is not currently available from a terrestrial provider. The program encourages fiber optic network deployment directly to homes and businesses. ISPs will be required to offer low-cost plans and participate in federal broadband assistance programs, including the Affordable Connectivity Program, and any successor plan designated by the U.S. Treasury. The application window is expected to open later this month, and we will be hosting a technical assistance webinar specific to the program and the application. This program is very similar to Broadband Opportunity Program in its structure, the main difference being that eligible entities that can participate and the focus on the direct tie back to workforce, healthcare, and education within every project. There is no award cap for this program. However, each project must show strong community engagement and leverage of private funding. The second program that is part of the Capital Projects Fund is the Digital Connectivity Technology Program, comprising 5% of the total allocation. Upon approval from the U.S. Treasury, this program will address methods to deliver services and through devices and equipment made available in public facilities or to qualifying households through a long-term loan program administered by local entities such as libraries and other community anchor institutions. And the third program that is part of the Capital Projects Fund is will use the remaining 25% of the allocation, and it will be to build and improve multi-purpose community facilities. This program will prioritize areas with low to moderate incomes as identified by the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development, and the highest priority for the projects will be given to areas with no or inadequate community facilities. At this time, the U.S. Treasury has not completed their review of our last two proposals, the Digital Connectivity Technology Program and the Multipurpose Community Facilities. We are awaiting further guidance from the U.S. Treasury on their status. So the application window, as I stated, for the Capital Projects Fund Broadband Infrastructure Program is expected to open in February of 2023, so this month. The statewide technical assistance webinar will be held after opening the application window. Grant awards are not capped, and private leverage for projects, again, is strongly encouraged. The Broadband Equity Access and Deployment Program, or BEAD, was established through the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act to provide further support for states to expand broadband internet through service through infrastructure and digital connectivity projects. Florida's letter of intent was submitted to the National Telecommunications and Information Administration on July the 12th, to which secured Florida's participation in the BEAD program. While each state will receive a minimum of $100 million for this program, it is expected that that amount for Florida will be significantly higher, and that is simply based on unserved and underserved locations. In August 2022, the office submitted a project proposal titled Prosperity Through a Connected Florida, which was approved by the NTIA in November. The approval for the project proposal was the first step in receiving the BEAD funding. The initial award of $5 million in initial planning funds will allow the office to develop a comprehensive five-year action plan, which will include and identify Florida's broadband internet availability and accessibility, incorporate the Florida Digital Adoption and Use Plan, which I'll talk about momentarily, the Florida Strategic Plan for Broadband, as well as serve as a benchmark for adoption strategies, goals, measures, and more to successfully connect all of our Floridians. The project will also include a proposed timeline for deployment of that of the funds that we receive. The BEAD cybersecurity minimum requirements include that each subgrantee must have cybersecurity risk management plans in place, which must be either operational, if the prospective grantee is providing service prior to the award of the grant, or be ready to be operationalized upon providing service if the prospective subgrantee is not yet providing that service prior to the grant award. The cybersecurity risk management plan must reflect the latest version of the National Institute of Standards and Technology, or NIST, framework for improving critical infrastructure cybersecurity, and the standards and controls set forth in Executive Order 14028 and specifies the security and privacy controls being implemented. The plan will be reevaluated and updated on a periodic basis as events are warrant, and the plan will be submitted prior to the allocation of funds. The BEAD cybersecurity minimum requirements for supply chain risk management include the following. Prior to allocation of funds, each subgrantee must have a supply chain risk management, or SCRM, plan that is either operational if the prospective grantee is providing service prior to the award of the grant, or be ready to be operationalized upon providing service if the prospective grantee is not yet providing service. The plan is based on key practices discussed in NIST publication, Key Practices in Cybersecurity and Cyber Supply Chain Risk Management, observations from industry and related SCRM guidance from NIST. The plan will be reevaluated again and updated on a periodic basis and will be submitted prior to the allocation of funds. The office is currently working to partner with the Florida Digital Services to ensure cybersecurity requirements are included in the BEAD program application and scoring criteria, as well as ensuring the office can provide the correct guidance to applicants and communities. And the last program that the office will be overseeing is the Florida Digital Adoption and Use Program, which is part of the State Digital Equity Planning Grant Program through the IIJA. And the purpose of this program is to promote the achievement of digital equity, support digital inclusion activities, and build capacity for efforts relating to the adoption of broadband by residents. DEO received just over $2.4 million in October of 2022 to create a comprehensive statewide plan for Florida titled the Digital Adoption and Use Plan, in lockstep with the Florida Strategic Plan for Broadband, and it will serve as a benchmark and roadmap for achieving digital success. The plan includes a procurement to award a vendor to assist with community outreach and engagement, statewide listening sessions, plan development, and data collection and analysis. DEO will guide the overall effort through a partnership with CareerSource, the local technology planning teams, and other various state agencies. The Digital Equity Planning Grant is the first step in the digital equity program process. And to assist the office in drafting a plan, the request for proposal or an RFP was posted to the My Florida Marketplace site, as well as for review on the office webpage. And the selected vendor will be drafting our BEAD five-year action plan, as well as the Florida Digital Adoption and Use Plan, and the procurement will be open through February 21st for anyone who is interested in responding. Thank you for your time this morning, and I'm happy to take some questions.
I actually got a couple of quick questions, and it kind of surrounding around the local government. How many local governments or like municipalities or co-ops have applied for the grants up to this point?
The number of municipalities or local governments would be part of the applicant public-private partnership.
Okay.
So every applicant must show that they have a partnership through and with that internet service provider to ensure the maintenance and sustainability of the project.
Okay, I guess may I rephrase my question. How many co-ops are starting to get in the broadband business?
So for the Broadband Opportunity Grant Program, the eligible applicants are listed per statute, and so for each of the 110 applications, we've got a internet service provider partnered with the local government, and we have been working with the co-ops that are entering into the broadband space under various programs, and we can follow up with you specifically to talk you through kind of what that's looked like right now and what they're looking at going forward. But it's a little different under each of the programs.
Okay. And I guess I'm trying to get to a quick question. So if we have a co-op that decides to get in the broadband market and a hurricane hits them, what does that look like? Can they, because we've been talking about how, you know, municipalities are kind of moving money from, you know, their one fund to the next, and are they going to be able to do that? Raise the rates on their rate payers in order to pay for some of their like connectivity. If they need to, are they going to be able to move money back and forth?
So I'll invite Director Smith to add on if I miss anything. For our grant programs, under any of these programs, we're not just looking for who can maybe put a little bit of infrastructure in the ground. We're not just looking for who might be able to be interested in this space. We're looking for grant opportunities where we have committed entities that have the ability to not just construct this system, not just construct this infrastructure, but provide the service, maintain that service. And in Florida, maintaining that service does mean certain amounts of preparing for against risk and preparing for resilience in certain circumstances. So all of our applications look for what is your financial ability to keep that system operational and serviceable to all of your customers. As far as the rates themselves go, we aren't in the rate space for these grant opportunities. We're working up front for most of these programs as far as the infrastructure, and then like Director Smith said, we do have some programs for the making sure that the use of the service is understood and able to be trained on.
Okay. Questions?
So as you were going through one of the previous slides, you talked about the speed test, and I appreciate you having it on there. Is 11.8 megabits in this building good? Doesn't seem like it's very good.
I want to say no comment. I appreciate that you took the speed test, and we're part of the speed test is we need to know what users are experiencing all across Florida. So any speed test result is a good data point to have. Ultimately, the Broadband Opportunity Grant Program per statute has a targeted service of or targeted bringing service to unserved individuals that don't have a minimum of 25 download, 3 upload. So your 11.8 would not qualify for the 25. So I can't speak as to what is the infrastructure in the ground or in the air in the building. So there's always a little bit of a disconnect between what is maybe available in the ground, what is the internet service provider or companies, multiple ones, what do they have available technology to be used, and what is currently accessible by the technology in your hands, the technology in your home, the individual using that technology. So there's maybe an opportunity there, but we need to look a little bit more.
Gotcha. I feel like my Comcast Xfinity back in Fort Lauderdale is much quicker. Thank you.
Ranking Member Joseph.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was curious about some of the source of the funding for the projects. So you mentioned a couple that you had applied to. Which agencies are you working through to get the funds? Like to which agencies are you applying to get the funds?
Thank you. The U.S. Department of Commerce and U.S. Treasury.
Thank you. Thank you. And were these funds allocated through like any particular funding initiative? Like I'm trying to pinpoint, is it like the American Rescue Plan? Is it the Build Back? I can't even keep track of all of them. Like where is this money coming from?
Great question. So the capital projects fund programs as well as our broadband opportunity program are funded through ARPA. So the American Rescue Plan Act, okay. The state and local fiscal recovery funds are that where we receive the $400 million for our Broadband Opportunity State Program. And the Capital Projects Fund is through through the U.S. Treasury is ARPA.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I want to thank the director and deputy secretary, for coming today. I know that you guys have briefed me on the overview. I appreciate it, and I want to admonish my colleagues that your office is really the clearinghouse from the money that's raining from the heavens, if you want to say that, to make sure that it's utilized properly and that there's not overlap and that the people who receive this money have both the capacity and the knowledge and the sustainability to make sure that these monies, regardless of the source of these funds, and we're thankful for our federal partners for that, but the state has also invested a great deal, making sure that those monies have a great return on the investment, because the end result is to make sure that no matter if you're in Okeechobee or Two Egg or Sop Choppy or Dixie County, that when you go to send, that there's a signal available to transfer your communications. And of course, we found what an acute problem that we had during the pandemic when I know in my area, when the students would have to go to McDonald's for the Wi-Fi in order to transact their homeworks at night. And that's not acceptable, especially in this day and time. So thank you for being the most valuable player or the center pivot or whatever you want to call it here to make sure that our tax money is used wisely and that we get this service out to the constituents that all of us serve. So thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chairman. And yes, thank you very much for your presentation today. So going back to speed, so we talked a little bit yesterday, you stopped by my office, and I appreciate that very much. But is 25-3, right? We talk about the need, claim about the pandemic and kids doing school online, telehealth services. My biggest question is 25-3, is that fast enough?
Thank you for the question. So as you mentioned, in today's modern uses and what the various programs under the office are really looking to achieve, it's enabling folks to engage in all various assets of what is modern society, essentially. We want people to be able to engage in education at home. We want people to engage in those workforce training, those workforce development, right? We want people to be able to learn and grow from their homes. And of course, then some of it's the most critical is as we see the medical field adjusting to being able to provide service to further areas, more distant areas, we want people to be able to engage fully in telehealth opportunities wherever they may be. So depending on the use at home, depending on the number of individuals that might be attempting that use at any given time, 25-3 is the bare minimum for the broadband opportunity program to target, to find those truly unserved areas to bring service to those areas. So the actual speed for use in each of these situations or in these homes, Director Katie Smith and her team have ensured that through the opportunity program in those grant applications, we're looking for projects that are scalable. Projects that are not just bringing the minimum of 25-3 to the home, but are bringing a minimum that's already higher than that. That's maybe 100 download and 10 or 20 upload, and then able to build from there. If we're going to be investing dollars in infrastructure, we want to make sure that it's going to be something that is improving what we have today, but is relevant for tomorrow and able to improve the day after, so that as technology advances, as needs arise or evolve, we're able to meet those needs. So I hope that's helpful for your understanding. Question.
We should just go to a gig. Look at his face.
We follow your direction. We're happy to implement whatever programs or opportunities you all have
Rep,
us.
Rep Brantone.
All right, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for your great presentation. I think under the Capital Project Fund, you mentioned multi-purpose community facilities. Can you tell me what exactly is a multi-purpose community facility?
A community center.
All right, thank you, Mr. Chair. So an applicant could apply for funds to build a community center with a computer lab and broadband access and all of that?
While we have not, we have the proposal drafted. We don't have the nuances of that program identified yet. Yes, the program is to build and update community centers to be connected enough to do telehealth appointments and have computer labs and have a place to apply for a job and learn how to utilize computers and the internet and engage in digital literacy for whoever is interested in that.
All right, thank you, Ms. Chan. Last question. So going to the FASTA Florida broadband GIS map, what initiatives will you all put in place to make sure that by the time the 5 years is up, that the entire map will be colored in?
So a lot of the effectiveness of these grant funds in any of these programs is something that we're very interested in, and that we're making sure that is taken into account from square one to square whatever number you want to put in there. So to some degree, it's being responsible upfront in finding applicants who have the technical wherewithal, who have the financial solvency, who have that knowledge base, so that they're bringing meaningful service, that they are constructing projects that are long term. And then it's through some of our office's ongoing activities and monitoring, but a large portion of how we will achieve success and how we will continue to make sure that unconnected or unserved individuals get service is going to be through those local technology planning teams. Those communities, I can't stress enough how important they are. They're our direct partner. There's a regular partnership there with the Florida League of Cities, the Florida Association of Counties, other state agencies. And so it's that entity at the local level knows usually better than much of us at the state level as far as the individual pockets that might still be unserved or might still be in need of bringing that service to them and in what way that service may be brought. So we're also not looking at specifically directing you must bring a service through this method or this method. We want to see people get served. And so whatever the tool is, whatever that technology is, there's many different options now, and we won't begin to predict what future options might be there. So a lot of it will be just staying in very good, clear communication and contact with those local groups, and then making sure that as we bring in new grant programs one at a time, we're finding ways to see if there's still a gap or if there's still something that's an impediment to rolling out that service. We're finding ways to overcome that. And so being flexible when we need to and pivoting when necessary, I think will get us quite far in achieving that success.
Rep. Campbell and Rep. McFarland, you're next.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you for this presentation, Dr. Smith. Director Smith, thank you for coming by my office and speaking with me yesterday. Just a few questions regarding the unserved communities. Now, with these funds, how do we know or do you know how long it is taking for the system to be up and running for these unserved communities?
And I'll ask Director Smith to jump in here. So the Broadband Opportunity Grant Program is the first of the several programs, and that we received funding from the legislature in last session. Director Smith's team completed the rulemaking necessary for that program and it was a notice and comment public rulemaking workshops across the state, but completed it with a lot of community support and input in really record time, just a few months. We're able to open the application cycle back in November and actually get those awards out as Director Smith said. So we're in the initial phase of getting some of these up and going, and it's very dependent upon what the project looks like and what assets the company bringing the service has in the area. So in some instances, some of the projects are, it's maybe one neighborhood in between two others that maybe there's a connection already there, and it's just a few branch lines that brings a quick service. It's what we might see in our backyard, somebody showing up and doing some digging and trenching. In other instances, it might be a whole trunk line that has to come in running along a bigger road or a major artery of transportation and then branching from there. And so the companies I know and have been very excited to start this process, but I don't know if you have more information on top of that.
Thank you for the question. It is a moving target, right? So as we complete these projects, then we have to go back and make sure that everyone is served at that new minimum speed for that program. So to Deputy Secretary's point, there are definitely a lot of opportunities to make sure that everybody does get connected, but with each program, there is an opportunity to take that space that is not yet connected, ensure that it is not already receiving funds and they're not in that program, in that process of building out the infrastructure before we see another application come in.
Follow up, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Chair. What is the length of time that these companies are to, or these service providers are to, use the funding that is presented to them?
The first two programs that we have, the Broadband Opportunity Program and the Capital Projects Fund, those projects must be completed by December of 2026. The BEAD program pushes that out just a little bit more. I believe that goes to 2029. But it is also a larger pot of funding. It is, and there's a lot more pieces of that particular program to implement.
That's the total allowable window to spend those funds. And so that's not the expected timeline for particularly the Broadband Opportunity Grant Program, where we're issuing awards today. I'd love to, say it'll be on this specific date and hold some people accountable to that. A lot of it is project specific and dependent on, some of the awards, as the governor announced them on February 2nd, we have 58 projects that are able to essentially get started as soon as we can finalize that grant agreement to move those dollars into those projects. We have other projects that are working through that statutory challenge process to make sure that we're not overlapping funding sources, overlapping service. So we'll probably see some immediate results from the initial group, and then it'll just be sort of a rolling rate of completed projects and then activated service.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wanted to talk a little bit about your broadband mapping efforts so far. And I know that a lot of the legislation that we did just took effect July 2020. So that's not a ton of time to do a statewide map. But could you tell us a little bit more about what the mapping looks like? So had you been doing a mapping of what state connectivity looked like prior to July 2020?
Prior to July 2020, the DEO did not have an Office of Broadband and was not engaged in that space. And Director Katie Smith used to be the entire membership of the Office of Broadband, and she did not have a map at that time. Over the last year and a half for development and execution, but primarily the two maps that we mentioned, the Faster Florida Broadband Map and the availability map. The one map is purely the speed tests and the speed test results, and that's the map that is actively updated in real time for each crowdsourced speed test data point. So Vice Chair's speed test is live on there with a slight scramble pattern so that you can't identify the exact dot to the very specific geographic location. But that's a real-time updated map, and so we see those green dots for good service. We see those yellow dots for the mid-range, red dots for the low range, and unconnected areas. And so that map has been, we see spikes as local technology planning teams send out surveys as members engage their constituents and have people take it. Some days a little bit of lull, but we keep that data ongoing and updating. And then the other map is a GIS map, and one of the layers is the availability map. It is the speed test. It's just not updated in real time. It's updated, I believe, daily? Weekly, okay. And the other layers on that GIS map include, like we mentioned, the anchor institutions, as well as environmentally sensitive areas, as well as the rural digital opportunity funds. And the reason for that GIS layered map, and more layers, many more layers to come, but the reason for that GIS layered map is so that while we're working with community partners, while we're working with state partners and agency partners, There's a little bit more data to look and plan out and say, okay, we're looking to provide service. We're looking for an area that we want to start having those conversations to find someone to provide service. And we work regularly with the private community about their what their interests are and where the maps might be going. And we look forward to continuing to grow those maps, keep updating those maps, and we'd love to follow up with you on specifics if you're interested in that.
On the crowdsource input, what does the response rate look like?
Do you know the numbers?
That is a ongoing challenge. So by challenge, I just mean, you know, it's making sure that people feel comfortable to take the test. And it's making sure that we are accurately getting the information and that what is being tested is reliable. And we do feel like that information is very reliable. We want to make sure that everyone feels comfortable taking that test and sharing that data with us, because again, you know your community better than I do. And those residents, we want them to share that information with us, because driving through Florida, I have a pretty good idea of where connectivity is and is not. But I don't know about your specific location. And so sharing that information. So we did do an outreach campaign back last summer to build up those speed tests being taken. It's ongoing. We did receive a good number of tests. We can always take more. We can always accept more.
How many is a good number that you've received? You said you've received a good number. How is that? I've taken the test twice in the last 2 years. I've given it to 3 of my Chamber of Commerce's, and I think 5 people have taken it. So that's 7 from Sarasota. Can you quantify it a little bit?
We received, I believe, about 60,000 speed tests during that specific campaign. I would love to get in the hundreds of thousands with your help, maybe the millions with your help.
If on the GIS mapping then, so if we're going to say that crowdsourcing has a little way to go numerically, is the GIS, I think often people assume that the government knows everything. If you look at the map of Florida, is your GIS map, I mean, if I gave you my address, could you tell me if I'm red, yellow, green?
Probably not. Now, our GIS map, we are continuously updating. So we are still working internally to build that map out and make sure that we have more information to share with you, to share with our communities, to share with our residents. But it is also, it's constantly changing. And the best way for me to tell where those green and yellow and red dots are is to take the speed test.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you all for your presentation today. I'd like to pivot back to the community centers that Representative Anton mentioned. I mean, you mentioned that the rules aren't quite written or that there's some nuances still being developed. Is there any conversations with DEM about making these community centers hardened so they can be shelters for, you know, pre-storm and post-storm shelter activation? So is there any conversations with that?
We have a great partnership with DEM. We regularly work with them in several of the other offices and teams. We have not specifically had that conversation about overlapping the broadband funding with some of the DEM priorities. In general, DEO across our various programs, like our Rural Infrastructure Fund or Small and Rural Communities, or our Office of Long-Term Resiliency, Job Growth Grant Fund, all of these programs that we do look for cross opportunities where we can either leverage different funding sources to maximize what the community can get or what the community can construct or the benefit that they can get out of their project. And part of that process is to work regularly with partner agencies, most commonly Enterprise Florida, DEM, Florida Housing Finance Corporation. So we, as we're getting closer to knowing what the timing is on that, we will absolutely follow up. That's a great suggestion and very much appreciated.
Representative Gossett Seidman.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for your presentation. I know we met yesterday briefly, and I brought up to you the fact that in my District 91, Boca Raton, Highland Beach County, that self-driving car antennas are being installed along with upgrades in the broadband. And wondered, this would certainly not be as much a rural situation, but wondered how constituents and other reps could speak out in case this is a situation in their district, and if you have any further information. It is a very new detail to us, and wondered your input. Thank you.
Director Smith has been inundated with industry information as far as growing technology and technology opportunities. So I would call her an expert. She might try to avoid that label. As far as your specific situation you bring up, the Broadband Opportunity Grant Program, where we're at right now, giving out awards now, are bringing service to unserved, specifically unserved individuals. But in Opportunity Program, in Capital Projects Fund, in BEAD, and in any other broadband program where we're going to undertake, it's all about maximizing opportunity for technology to get the effect that is needed for that community. So we're open to pretty much any technology and that conversation, so long as it's a technology that is deployable, and then we'll get the results that are necessary. I've not had anyone come to us yet to ask about self-driving cars or any type of autonomous infrastructure for that purpose and others related to it. Not yet.
It's a great question. At this point in time, our office has been mostly focused on those unserved and underserved communities and just making sure that the connectivity and the availability and the access is there. There are communities that are leaps and bounds ahead of others, technology-wise and connectivity-wise. Those are the communities that could probably speak more intelligently than I can about, you know, those self-driving cars. That's not to say that it isn't something that we are certainly reading about, you know, trying to keep a pulse on. But most of our focus has been on the underserved and unserved to date.
Thank you.
And I did want to just comment that to the beginning of your question, even though we do say that we have had a lot of focus on small and rural communities, it's unserved regardless of where they are, right? The office, where there are pockets of urban areas that don't have service, and in later programs when we're in the education piece, we'll be looking across the state everywhere, regardless of whether you have brand new service and you need to learn it, or whether you've had service in your area but maybe you don't have the technical wherewithal, or you haven't had the means yet to use it. We'll be bringing training programs there, educational opportunities there as well.
Thank you. This was a follow-up, Mr. Chair. This was not a request by anyone we could locate in District 91. These antennas were simply installed, stating that in the future, within 5 years, 6 years, they would be very common in urban areas. So I was really wondering if it were being a traditional route that any broadband installations or upgrades would include such antennas. It was a surprise to the councils of my district and the residents, and so that's why I asked. Thank you.
Ranking Member.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Getting back to speed for a moment, Deputy Director, you had mentioned the bare minimum in response to Representative Yeager's question, and I think, Madam Director, you referred to the moving target. Are there some guidelines or industry standards of what we can expect in terms of at least upload speeds? Download speeds tend not to be as much of an issue, but like when you're on a Zoom, it's the upload speed that counts, right? So are there some standards that you are implementing just across the board in some of these programs?
It's, Great question. Every program that we have, basically what that 25-3 starts gives us a starting point. Anything under 20 that's 25-3 and below is unserved. So we've got to get everyone who is 25-3 and below up to a new minimum. That new minimum is dependent upon the funding source and which program it is. In an ideal world with the funding that we have, that the programs require scalable 100-100. But we have to get everybody out of that 25-3 and below and get them scalable to that 100-100. Some of the minimums, for example, for the Broadband Opportunity Program is 110. Capital Projects is 120. But the 100-100 is where we are seeing the federal government encouraging us to make that a scalable new minimum.
Follow up, Mr. Yep. Chair. So you mentioned unserved as being under 25-3. What about underserved? What would that be categorized as?
That's going to be the 25-3 to 110 for the Broadband Opportunity Program, or that 25-3 to 120 for capital projects, and so on. So it's really, again, it's just getting up to whatever those federal guidelines are telling us what that minimum is.
Thank you.
All right. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. The Affordable Connectivity Program, as you know, allows for low-income folks to get access to a $30 credit. Is your office doing anything to help people connect with that credit or any credits that we might have available through the state to lower their costs?
The Affordable Connectivity Program does not run through our office. It is right. A requirement that we do put on our applicants to participate in. But because they are run through the internet service providers, that information to connect would be based on the internet service provider themselves and working with their service provider.
And the Office of Broadband does stay up on the list of those internet service providers in Florida who participate in the Affordable Connectivity Program. And as Director Smith said, all of our grant programs, we are looking at that. That is one of the criteria questions. That's part of the application is, are you participating in this? Because in general, that goes towards the commitment of the service provider and the company to provide, you know, a long-term service to individuals. So it helps us understand where folks are at in their sophistication, their abilities.
That leads me to marketing dollars. Has the agency set aside any marketing dollars to educate the public, either about the mapping questions that my colleague asked about to take the survey, or about letting them know of opportunities with, whether it's ACP or whatever, that you have going on to penetrate some of these digital deserts?
We have previously utilized some funding for marketing. And with the upcoming programs, it's on our radar as we need to be considering if marketing is the right tool. The office is looking at, for the different programs that we're implementing, you know, an infrastructure program probably doesn't need marketing. But as you commented on some of the public training, where folks are really, we're making sure that that there's adoption of the service and then people can actually use it. We're considering marketing, and as we move into the implementation of those programs, it's very likely to be a tool that we use. But since they're not totally finalized yet, it's hard for me to say that we definitely will have a marketing plan of X, Y, or Z.
Last two questions.
Sure. Go ahead and just ask.
Thank you. So I'd love to talk to you further about the marketing plan and stuff to make sure that the information is getting out to the community. The last two questions I have, let me do with the first one. delving a little bit deeper into the mapping, and you had mentioned that you're not just focusing on the rural areas, but you're also looking at some of the connectivity underserved and unserved areas in cities. What are you finding, and what's your timeline for addressing those? Because it sounded like from your prior response that that was like sometime later down the road, or is she shaking her head? So I'm just curious to know more about what's going on with the cities that have some of these connectivity issues as well.
Absolutely. My response probably sounded that way because the Broadband Opportunity Grant Program is, per statute, it is very clearly focused on unserved. If you do not have service outside of your home at 25-3, then you are unserved. And so while we do have pockets in urban areas, we do have pockets in those mid-sized cities that have unserved individuals. We also have pockets of underserved, or we have pockets of areas where there's service, but maybe there's not adoption of that service. And so that's each one of those scenarios provides an opportunity for us to partner with the local community to find those communities and those needs, and then find ways to meet those needs. So the Broadband Opportunity Grant Program is it's a perfect program if you have actual unserved populations, regardless of whether they're rural or urban. So that's the program that's live right now. The Capital Projects Fund, as we move forward, you know, that's an infrastructure program that isn't looking just at the 25-3 or below, that's looking at 110. So there may be pockets in an urban area that would fall in that underserved category that the Capital Projects Fund could bring infrastructure to the area. And then moving forward, when we have the later Capital Projects Fund program later this year, and the BEAD programs later this year, where we're doing training, education, where we're really focusing on the digital adoption and use, we might be able to target some of those areas. We might be able to bridge some of those gaps where folks may have service now but aren't using it for some reason.
All right, thank you, members. We appreciate all your hard work. I know you guys have visited all of our offices some multiple times. But we appreciate all your hard work, and connectivity is really important for the state of Florida. Members, we do have an anniversary in the room. Rep. Cassell, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for the opportunity. For a point of personal privilege, today is my wedding anniversary, and the stars have aligned, and my husband is in the gallery today, so I wanted to recognize the gentleman. The gentleman from the 101st District of Florida, my husband, Michael Cassell, happy anniversary.
Hey. Valentine's Day, huh? day after. All right, so if there's no... there's no further business, Rep. LaMarca moves that we adjourn without objection. Motion passed.